It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Wednesday the 15th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today, Netflix announces its latest earnings. How's it doing? Well, the company just upped its subscription price on high-definition content to $11.99 a month, which might be a clue to its fears about how the long-term net neutrality debate will play out. But abroad, Netflix is in growth mode. Big time. It just expanded to 6 more European markets and now services 50 million people in 50 countries. We talked to the company's chief content officer a few weeks back, and Ted Sarando said that expanding abroad is all part of the plan.
If you just get down to just what people want to watch, our tastes are remarkably similar all around the world. And American television is, a great U.S. export.
Netflix's latest target market for big expansion might be Asia, but you got to spend money before you make money. So we'll keep you posted on how the company does after the earnings call today. From entertainment technology to a much bigger promise, using our new tools to make our cities work more efficiently and powerfully, this is the topic of a new book by Susan Crawford and Stephen Goldsmith. The title? The Responsive City, Engaging Communities Through Data Smart Governance. Susan Crawford joins me to talk about this. Susan, thanks for talking with me.
Oh, it's great to be here, Ben.
Okay, so data smart governance. Can you give me a specific example of this?
Doing small things very well and making them visible will give your city the room to do large things. So, for example, people using Boston's Citizens Connect, it's a mobile app that lets you tell the city what's up with your neighborhood, whether there's a street light out or a pothole that hasn't been filled. People using that app feel like they're helping, not complaining. And that's a very specific, very human example of collaboration that makes democracy work better, that makes the United States work better.
I'm thinking of healthcare.gov as one place where there's been a little bit of fear about the idea of having the government store a bunch of our personal data. What's the best way for government to go about protecting this kind of data if it's going to be pulling it in and collecting it on citizens and cities and things like that?
Well, government has to be at the leader of the pack when it comes to adopting the best possible security protections for data. It would make a lot of sense, for example, for cities to use private clouds. But here's the flip side. If we lock things down to such an extent that Agency A can never talk to Agency B, You get lots of inefficiencies.
I've experienced that in the analog world with paying parking tickets. It seems like it takes forever for one government agency to get the data from another government agency.
Exactly. So there should be a Yelp for city services. The District of Columbia has something called grade.dc.gov that's trying to do that.
Uh-huh.
So it's not easy, but what the book does is lift up and celebrate the stories of a bunch of heroes in city halls across America who are working on these problems.
It seems like we're at this really interesting moment right now, and it could go one of many ways.
The Responsive City tells the story of Chicago that is trying very hard not to rely on enormous vendors to get this work done. I think a big risk here is that we leave this entire domain to IBM and Siemens and other companies who then have their own self-interest, not necessarily aligned with the public interest. So I'd like to see cross-trained leaders in policy and tech taking on leading positions in city halls, and that's starting to happen.
Susan Crawford is a visiting professor at Harvard Law School, and she's the co-author of The Responsive City, Engaging Communities Through Data Smart Governance. Susan, it's so nice to have you on again.
It's such a pleasure. Thanks so much.
For the past few days, we've been talking about a specific hacking problem. Third-party applications. That's how hackers reportedly gained access to users' data and passwords for both the disappearing messaging app Snapchat as well as cloud storage service Dropbox. It can be confusing, but the key thing to understand here is that third-party applications are built to let you do extra stuff with your regular apps. Saving snaps, for instance, even though Snapchat is based on the idea that your images and texts disappear. Here's ESET researcher Stephen Cobb.
Third-party apps sometimes bring, along with additional functionality, additional vulnerability, and break somehow the security model that the primary application was built upon.
The problem is that even if you don't use a third-party app, the data you send to other people can be vulnerable.
this is where the trust circle can break down. If you're sharing something in a secure way with a friend, but your friend is not following the same level of security that you are, then your information can leak through a friend. It's almost as simple as, do you trust someone with whom you share a secret to keep it a secret? But yet it's translated into the digital equivalent, where perhaps you're more diligent about the permissions that you give to applications than some of the people that you exchange information with.
Something to understand and to think about whenever you're sharing sensitive information with others online. And before we go, a message. That's Khal Drogo speaking in his native tongue of Dothraki in the first season of Game of Thrones. Don't you wish you could sound that badass? Well, good news, there's an app for that. Yep, the book and the online course now has an app companion that will teach you the fantasy language from the hit HBO show. So let's try it out. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Jesser Tech. From APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.